You're listening to Voices from the 2008 ACLU Membership Conference. I'm Matt Dellinger. Levon Bo Jones was released from prison in North Carolina in May of 2008 after 14 years serving on death row. In 1993, Jones was convicted by a Dublin County jury of first-degree murder in the shooting death of Layman Grady, a local bootlegger. Mr. Jones is here with us. Welcome to the podcast and to the outside world.
Thank you.
You've been out of prison for a matter of days, a month, just over a month?
Almost a month.
How does it feel?
Well, it feels good. Better than being locked up. Yeah.
And what did you do? What was the first thing you did when you left prison?
Well, I had me a good time. Got to meet my family I'd never seen. You know, the little ones.
Oh, yeah? You have a...
Little nieces.
Yeah.
Got a chance to meet all of them, you know, and get some good food.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You mentioned to me that you drove here.
Oh, yeah.
I was surprised that you were already driving a month after being in prison for a dozen years.
Oh, yeah. I think I got my license maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks after I got out.
Uh-huh.
Because I had to wait for my Social Security card. That was the only thing that was hindering me from getting them.
What's the reacclimation process like? I mean, it must be a lot to get used to.
Well, no, it's the same thing. The only difference is the prices of things. It's got, you know, and roads changes, you know, few changes in things. But other than that, it's the same.
Yeah. You didn't get used to, I mean, you were just like riding a bicycle, I guess they say. You just come out of prison and
Come right back out, hey, from one thing to another.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. We just talked to Daryl Hunt.
Yeah.
And he was talking about some work that he does helping prisoners in their transition back out of prison into normal society. You've met now, the two of you.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah.
Did you hear about his story when you were in prison?
Yes, I did.
You're both from North Carolina.
Right, yeah. I think he's from Winston-Salem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And where? What part of North Carolina are you from?
Seven Springs.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you'd heard about his exoneration.
Right, yeah.
And was your own case underway? Was he a sort of inspiration at all?
Some. But him and quite a few more got out before I did, you know. So it kind of led me along, you know.
Now, what role did the ACLU play in helping you clear your name?
Well, just being there for me and giving me information that I needed and doing things that I couldn't do, like in the courts, you know, filing different matters in the court that I couldn't, you know, file.
So they represented you?
Yeah.
It was part of the ACLU Capital Punishment Project.
Yeah.
And
in some matters.
Sorry.
Yeah. I say in some matters. They represented me in some matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the new trial was ordered because a judge decided that you'd had inadequate legal counsel during your first trial. Tell me about that first experience in 1993.
Well, after I finally got my appeals to appeal it to the federal courts, got into the federal courts, and he got to hearing the evidence about the witnesses and everything, and he finally come to a conclusion that it was wrong. Because I was falsely convicted.
But that first trial, when you were first going through it, and you were maintaining your innocence, but you were nevertheless found guilty. Did you feel like...
Yeah, but it was a setup. I knew it all the time, you know what I'm saying? And then after I got my briefs and all my paperwork in Raleigh, and then everything just come out and it showed me that my lead lawyer, he was married to the victim's niece, so... That was a conflict of interest.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, everything was just a downfall, you know.
Now, your conviction and eventually your release hinged on the word of your former lover, Lovely Lorden?
Well, that's the way they put it, but I don't...
Is that not true?
Well, that's in statements and documents, that's the way they got it. You know, but in reality, nah, it wasn't that way.
It was the system itself.
The court system itself.
You think that they encouraged her to...
Yes, they did.
How did that play out? What happened?
Well, we were having problems. Me and her were having problems, so I left her. So
yeah.
That opened the door right there for her to, you know...
She wasn't too happy with you.
Nah. So, you know,
And they came to her asking the questions? And
I guess so. The information I got, that's what happened. And after they pursued her to give her testimony and change it quite a few times, then they brought it to the courtroom.
And there's some reward money, I understand.
Yeah, yeah, she received $4,000 for her part in convicting me being convicted.
But in the retrial, she did not testify, or she changed her story. She said that she had...
Well, in the federal court, she followed the same lead. She said the same thing, but my lawyers working on the case, they got her to recant her testimony.
Now, the prosecutor in the case has said publicly to the newspapers that he still thinks you're guilty. Why is that, and how does that make you feel hunted in some way, or like a cloud over your head still?
It's really bringing out to me that he's not to follow the law, he's not following the law, nor the rules of the law. You know, he got his own agenda, and that's what he's going by. You know, what he believe or what he want to believe, and he want to try to make the people convince the people of that. You know, not the way of the law.
But he's still the prosecutor in your community.
I think so.
Does that hang over your head that he, do you think he's, I guess we can't know, but I mean, does it bother you to have him say those things in the newspaper?
Well, not really, because I know what I done and what I didn't do. He can't tell me no different. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's the way I feel about that.
You are the 8th North Carolina man spared execution after charges have been dropped.
Yeah.
Tell me about life on death row, and do you believe that there are more people on death row who are innocent?
Well, it can be. I mean, you know, I'm not here to judge that, but...
But does everyone say they're innocent?
Well, quite a few say they're innocent.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the point of the evidence of going by the law.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But if you follow the law, a lot of times when it come out, it'll come out, whether the person innocent or guilty.
No, when you're on death row, though, are you only among other people who've been sentenced to death? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that must be a
rough group of people. Well, it's miserable, and it's a place I don't want to be. I put it like that, you know. And it's amazing how I went through it, you know. And I'm glad I'm out, and so, you know, taking the best route from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are your plans now?
Well, my plans is to live and be happy, you know, and try to get compensation for what I've been through. You know what I'm saying? So that's my main event right now.
You have goals? You have any idea what you want to do to keep busy, or places you want to see?
Quite a bit. Yeah. I like to get around. See all over the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. One place to another.
Where have you been so far? Just in the last
Raleigh,
month, I mean.
Raleigh, Washington. That's about it.
That's it. Yeah. That's a lot, probably.
Well, it's a start, yeah. Yeah, it's a good start. Yeah.
Well, Bo Jones, thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Great to hear your story.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Voices from the 2008 ACLU Membership Conference. You can hear more of these conversations at the website aclu.org, and you can subscribe to the podcast feed through the iTunes Music Store. Just search for ACLU. This is Matt Dellinger.